What follows is an interview with Christians Together, a website serving the Christian community in the Scottish Highlands and Islands, speaking to a representative of Reform. Reform is a grouping within the Church of England which has biblical standards in that denomination. The Church of England, seen as the mother church for the worldwide Anglican community, is beset, as many other denominations are, with the subject of civil partnerships and homosexual clergy. The church has been struggling with the question of women being appointed to the position of bishop, a role and office which forms part of the hierarchical authority structure within the Episcopalian form of church government. Like many other denominations, the Church of England is divided between liberals and evangelicals. At the liberal end of the spectrum, the natural affinity is with the Roman Catholic Church, and indeed the Pope has recently created an ordinariate as a soft landing spot in the Catholic Church for Anglican clergy leaving the C of E. Some clergy have already made the jump, as the Roman Catholic Church does not permit women bishops, and of course its clergy are required to be celibate, irrespective of their sexual orientation. At the evangelical end of the Church of England, the concerns regarding women in authority and homosexuality are more related to biblical fidelity than form and tradition. And as such, the Roman Catholic Church, from which the embryonic Church of England seceded at the time of the Reformation, would not be an option for disaffected Anglican clergy. In the interview, reference is made to a serious division of opinion over 40 years ago in England regarding a growing liberal ecumenism within many churches there. And two theological heavyweights collided very spectacularly. At a National Assembly of Evangelicals in 1966, Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, in his address to that conference, called on evangelicals to leave what was seen as their compromised denominations. However, Reverend Dr. John Stott then used his position as chairman of the meeting to publicly rebuke and contradict Lloyd-Jones. The controversy and the stay-or-leave dichotomy continues through to the present day, and not just for those in the Church of England. Indeed, in May of this year, 2001, the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland is faced, yet again, with the question of how it should respond to homosexuality in its ministerial ranks. While the matter has been debated ad nauseam, with fudge and prevarication aplenty, crunch time could well be approaching, with both sides reportedly fed up with the continuing impasse. Depending on the outcome, it could be that many, in pulpit and pew and on one side of the debate or another, will find themselves considering their position. Do I stay or do I leave? So on now to our interview with the representative from Reform. Well, we're speaking this afternoon to Reverend Paul Dawson, and Paul is the media officer for a group called Reform in England. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Colin.
Hello, thank you for taking the time to speak. First of all, for the benefit of those who may be listening to this, could you just explain briefly, Paul, what Reform is, how long it's been in existence, and what it aims to do?
Certainly. Reform was founded in 1993, just around the time that the General Synod in the Church of England passed legislation to approve women being ordained as priests. And it was formed really in response to that. And it's a network of individuals and churches, both within the Church of England and in connection with the Church of England, who feel committed to wanting to see the Church of England return to its biblical foundations and be reformed from within. So hence the name Reform.
Now, you mentioned women bishops. Was that the starting point?
The ordination of women as priests in 1993 was really the starting point. And it was at that time a number of ministers in the Church of England recognised that this might well be the indication of a direction of a move away from what had hitherto been seen as a clearly evangelical understanding of church order and an evangelical understanding of the Bible. And that this would be a move away from that direction. hence reform was born.
Now, would it be true to say that even prior to that the Church of England was a pretty broad church?
Yes, it always has been. And, you know, some listeners may go back to the 1967 Great Debate with Martin Lloyd-Jones and John Stott, where Lloyd-Jones called for people to leave the Church of England and Stott called to stay. And the jury's really still out on whether that was a right decision for many to stay. Certainly, evangelicals within the Church of England find it very difficult to be promoted to positions of leadership in terms of being bishops, etc. And so there is a question mark there over whether that has been an effective strategy. But nevertheless, there are many churches and individuals within Reform who recognise that although there are difficulties within the Church of England, there are also difficulties outside it. And different people, to be honest, Colin, come down in different positions in conscience on what they can live with and what they can put up with as Christians in terms of tolerating degrees of variance with their neighbours.
Now, I mean, without going back as far as the Reformation, don't do that. But would it be true to say that even since then and to the present, that the Church of England is divided between what we might call low church evangelical and high church Anglo-Catholic?
Yes, that's correct, and that still exists. And what's interesting is in the current debates that are going on, particularly around the areas of sexuality and the role of men and women in church life, that actually we at the what we might call the conservative evangelical or classic evangelical end of the spectrum find ourselves often in agreement with those at the very high church, more Catholic end, which is an unusual allegiance in some ways. And we see that as a place where we can work together and fight together in order to see legislation that is helpful for both, whilst recognising significant differences between us and not pretending that we are the same on everything.
So we have this almost paradox, you might say, where people at opposite ends of the theological spectrum are agreeing on the same thing but for different reasons.
That's right. And that, if people look at the national newspapers or listen to the national media, often evangelicals get sort of branded as traditionalists, which we think is quite interesting to invite a journalist perhaps to come into an evangelical Anglican church where perhaps we don't wear robes and the music is very modern, and to describe that as being a traditionalist is a bit odd. But that's because they're trying to get a handle on who the people are as they see it, opposed to the changes. They sort of lump us all together.
Yes, well, of course, as we both know, within the church it's difficult and you have to understand, and for secular media it's even more so. But on the two points of women bishops and sexuality, while there may be agreement that this is not something to be desired across the spectrum, the responses across the spectrum would be quite different. What I mean by that is that the Anglo-Catholic end of the church, if a clergyman or others were to leave, they might find a happier home in the Roman Catholic Church.
Yes.
Whereas at the evangelical end, that would not be an option.
Correct. And just this week, in fact, it was announced that the first 600 lay members, and I think around 20 or 30 clergy, have actually left the Church of England to join the Roman Catholic Ordinariate. Not as big a number as some suspected might happen, but nevertheless significant in showing that it is actually, the drift has already begun. For us in the evangelical end of things, you're right, Rome isn't an attraction. But what has happened already is that some clergy, including one or two of my own close friends, have in effect been forced out of the Church of England because they have wanted to plant gospel churches and see the need for gospel teaching churches in areas where there currently is none, and have, although they were part of and ordained in the Church of England, have been asked to hand in their licenses in effect because the bishops and those in authority have deemed it unacceptable to start new churches and call them Anglican. And that's a very difficult position for them. And they are the sorts of people that we in Reform want to support and want to help, because we consider them to be Bible-believing members of the Church of England, just like a vicar of a parish church. They are running churches where they long to see Jesus Christ preached. They long to uphold church order and administer the sacraments appropriately. And for them to be, as it were, thrown out of or deemed not acceptable by the Church of England is, we think, is a disgrace.
Now, you mentioned bishops, and within the Episcopalian system, it is hierarchical, is it not?
Yes, it is, and that is part of the difficulty. It's a thing that, as far as I can see, that bishops in the Church of England can be a great blessing. Indeed, in the area where I'm a minister in West London, we have a bishop, the Bishop of Kensington, who's an excellent Bible teacher. I was at a licensing of a minister on Tuesday night, and he preached the gospel very faithfully. And we rejoice in that. And perhaps if there were more bishops like him, giving partial care to the clergy, preaching the Bible faithfully, we would not be in the position that we're in now. And the danger is that over the years, the idea of the bishop has come to be seen as something that the Bible never says it is, as a kind of centre and focus for unity, as opposed to a servant who is there to teach the scriptures, to refute error, to care for congregations and to care for the clergy.
So is that then, in essence, the root of your problem?
It certainly is one, is part of the problem. The other element that many would point to, more learned than me in the ways of the Church of England, would be the actual workings of the General Synod. That the idea that it's an idea that in principle seems good to have a democratically elected body of people who will make decisions. But the trouble is when the General Synod makes decisions that just seem to run contrary to the scriptures, then what are you left with? You're left with a governance by consensus rather than accepting the rule of the scriptures. And so that would be the other factor that many have pointed to. Now, there's no reason why the House of Bishops, if it was so minded, could overrule the General Synod and actually rule it more firmly, as it were. They haven't done that, and certainly in the debates that are raging over whether women should be appointed as bishops, it's very interesting that in the last debate at the General Synod, the Archbishop of Canterbury and Archbishop of York put forward a proposal that would have not gone all the way to appease the likes of ourselves, but gone most of the way, but that was turned down by Synod. We think that's a great shame, because it does show that the archbishops are minded to try and not allow the church to divide over this.
But I mean, even synods are part of a hierarchy.
Yes, they are.
And in effect, what you're describing there, and you know, we have a similar situation in Scotland, where we have leadership by committee.
Yep.
I mean, I think I quote correctly from F.F. Bruce, who the church historian, when he said there's no record in the New Testament of any one fellowship, local church, being subordinate to another.
No, that's right. And it's trying to work from the bottom up, from the scriptures up, isn't it, Colin, and work out. There's certainly plurality of eldership. That seems to be there in the New Testament, in, you know, that there'll be plural teaching elders who will exercise a teaching function, as well as perhaps ruling elders who won't necessarily be teaching, but perhaps be in a more administrative role. And then trying to work out what is the place of someone like Titus or Timothy, who seem to have some degree of authority over more than one congregation. Hence the idea of a kind of bishop function has emerged. And as ever with these things, that we're left in the Church of England with a situation which is far from what we would want it to be. And so in reform, we're then left saying, well, we could either just say, let's shut up shop and just do something else and start our own denomination, or do we try and keep working for the reform of what can and has been used by God greatly back to a more biblical basis? There are many Church of England churches up and down the country where the gospel is being taught faithfully, where people are coming to the Lord Jesus Christ, and we rejoice in that. But there are many that are not.
I mean, as an external spectator, it would seem to me, and please correct me if this perception is faulty, that the issue of sexuality and women in leadership only became an issue for the denomination when it got to bishop level. You know, it seemed to me that the Church of England was happy for congregations to have homosexuals practicing acknowledged within them, for congregations to sit under female priests, But it, as I say, only when it got to bishop level that the denomination got agitated about it. Is there not an element of double standards there?
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation. And I think what the issue becomes is it shows that when it's elevated to the level of being those in the highest positions of authority within the church, the bishops, that what's happened is that a certain theological position has in effect become institutionalized. Mm-hmm. And so the concern over women as bishops, for example, if I can give a practical example, is that when I was ordained in the Church of England, there was what existed called the two integrities. That is, those who accepted the role of women in leadership in the local church and those who thought that was wrong, such as myself, but that was a view that was acceptable within the Church of England.
That's the point I'm making. You know, it was acceptable as you've outlined it.
That's right.
But it only becomes unacceptable when actually priests have to sit under women or homosexual oversight.
Yeah, that's right. And the danger now is, as far as we can see, that if the General Synod and the powers pass legislation for women to be approved as bishops, that for someone like myself, then coming, if I wanted to be part of the Church of England, the Minister of the Church of England, there is no two integrities. That will go. And so there'll be many fine young men who want to be ministers who will just find themselves barred from the Church of England. Whereas until this point, they may have found difficulties with being in the Church of England, as some of us do, but nevertheless, the door was still open to them. Their views were still deemed acceptable, and they could train and minister within the Church of England, but the doors will now be shut for such men. And, of course, the knock-on effect of that is that the Church of England will then, in and of itself, become more and more, move further from the Scriptures, because those who would want to uphold the Scriptures will be barred from taking office within it.
But presumably, I mean, I'm talking future now, if a young man felt called to the pastoral and teaching ministry, is there any, what should I say, provision for him to function outside of denominationalism as we know it?
There is, and I have many friends who are doing exactly that. The trouble is that what we want to do is say that these men who would like to be part of the Church of England in terms of its doctrine, the 39 articles and so on, are still, many would say, a very good summary and a very concise and helpful version of the Reformed Protestant faith. They're not as detailed as something like the Westminster Confession. They give a degree of flexibility on second order issues, and there are many who are very happy under that basis to be part of the Church of England. But for those men, the door into the Church of England will be closed. If they come from a Church of England church such as my own, I'm talking with a man who's thinking exactly this through at the moment, it would be right for us as a local church to want to support them in their training and in their calling and so on.
Yes, so they would in effect become part of the church in England,
yes,
but not necessarily part of the Church of England.
Exactly, and what one route that we envisage, Colin, is that what we will have to do is link more coherently with the Anglican churches around the world, for example, in Africa, where there are many Anglican churches with whom we would stand shoulder to shoulder on many scriptural issues, and to see ourselves more in a fellowship with other Anglican churches as opposed to just the Church of England. And the GAFCON meeting in Jerusalem that happened, I think it's 2 years ago now, was a very interesting example of a coming together of people. Not all from exactly the same theological place, but of people who are happy to sit under the teaching of Scripture and want to see that upheld, being prepared to work together.
Now, of course, you've got something on the
background. Yeah, sorry, I'll just move to another room.
Okay, Paul, right. In issues such as we are discussing, and if clergymen, if a congregation feel they cannot live within the denomination as it's currently progressing, and there's talk of leaving, the old question of buildings and property invariably comes up.
Yes.
I take it that's as much a problem in England as it is in Scotland.
It certainly is. And it is. There is no easy solutions to that. And I think there will be times, we expect to see times when Church of England congregations will have to make difficult decisions about whether to stay within Church of England buildings, and the same for vicars. It has happened in just one or two cases in England so far, but as it is happening in America, so we might expect to see that happen more and more in this country.
In the light of all of that, I mean, when we look at the scripture, when we look at the early church, Acts chapters 2 to 4, for example, we see a, and maybe this is naive, but we see a rather delightful simplicity there. Do you think we have lost something along the way?
Yes, I agree. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do in our little local Anglican church, for example, is to, as we teach the scriptures and pray together, is to not recreate that, but to mould ourselves and shape ourselves by the Bible, and therefore be a community of people who are loving God, loving one another, expressing that practically, and reaching out with love to the lost people of God's world, and showing mercy to those in need, and of course showing mercy to those in need of Christ. And I think that is something that a local congregation should be striving to do. It doesn't mean that we can ignore the difficulties and the storms that sort of rage around us on a denominational level. But I think if local congregations concentrate themselves and set themselves on doing that, then actually God will, by his Spirit, do his work and raise up people who are born again and who love Jesus Christ. And what then happens, of course, is that those people want to see those values go on being promoted in their church and in the churches that they move to. Mm. And so the danger of all the denominational battles is that we take our eye off. Actually, it's God who works by his word through his Spirit to change people's lives.
Mm. And of course, the denominational battles, and I do stress again, we're not immune in Scotland, but they suck a tremendous amount of energy out of the church, don't they?
Yes, they do. And there are many clergymen who find themselves beset with having to attend committees and meetings and so on. Now, some of that is, of course, necessary if you're going to move outside of an independent congregational congregationalist view and say there is a connectionalism. We do see that, I think, in the New Testament, that there is this idea of churches helping and supporting one another. I think of 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, where the churches help their brothers and sisters in Judea.
But it would be on an informal basis.
That's right. And it's recognizing that if we see the Spirit of God at work in a church, then he will promote an other person-centeredness, a looking out from themselves to see how they can work with others. Now, where structures exist to help promote that and help guard against sin, because our sin will always say, no, we should keep it all for ourselves and not be generous to others, then those structures are good, and we can celebrate that and endorse that and work with that. It's when the structures then become in and of themselves the things that bind us, that's when it gets difficult.
So, I mean, you know, would it be fair to say that you're at a point within Reform where you have to consider to stay where you are in the existing setup, try and influence it back to a more biblical base, or do you say we're going to move out of that and try and recreate what you've just talked about?
That's right. There will be people within Reform who will be more inclined to one or the other. But I think what we really long for is to say what we have men who are presbyters, leaders of churches, at the moment here in England, who would make very fine bishops in the sense of being a sort of senior presbyter, giving oversight to clergy and helping them and guiding them. There are very, very fine ministers throughout England. Is there a way that we could see them appointed as bishops? And if that can't happen within existing structures, then perhaps that's the sort of thing we ought to think about doing ourselves. But that's going a very long way down a track, because, as you mentioned, the idea of provision of buildings and vicarages and so on is all bound up with being part of the established church.
And I mean, you know, when we talk about bishops and that what that term means, biblically it is to do with ministry and service.
That's right.
What it's come to mean is office and standing.
Yes, yes, that's right. And that is it. That is a sadness. And there are some bishops currently serving the Church of England who recognise that and are faithful men who are seeking to uphold the Scriptures, and we rejoice at that. But they are few in number, and there are fewer than we would like it to be. Mm. So that is a sadness. Yeah. I think we're in the battle.
It's interesting times.
It is.
Well, we've got, as I maybe mentioned at the start, Paula, a very important time coming up in May with the General Assembly, which is, I suppose, the closest thing to a sort of national synod, if I can put it that way. And all these tensions that we've discussed, I mean, I don't know what it's like in England, but in Scotland, historically, certainly, there's been a sense that even the unchurched looked to the church for leadership.
Yeah.
And very, very sadly, it's just not getting it, or it's a confused note.
I think that is the same, and it's part of being the established church in England. That, you know, who is it that the journalists want quotes from? Who is it that people look to? They say, well, what's the Church of England think about? And the real sadness is when the people who appear and whatever, they just say things that are so far from the biblical truth. Yeah, we sort of wring our hands, pray to God and say, come on, Lord, please shake this lot up. Yeah. Shake me up, reform us, reform ours. We're all sinners in need of a Saviour.
Well, I can just thank you again for these insights. I'm sure that the brothers and sisters in the body in Scotland will be interested, and not just interested, but to pray for the body within the UK. And thank you again for your time to speak.
Great. Thank you very much, Colin.
That was an interview with Christians Together, a website serving the Christian community in the Scottish Highlands and Islands, speaking to the Reverend Paul Dawson, representative of an evangelical group Reform in England, and speaking principally about the controversy in many churches regarding human sexuality. You can find this interview on the website www.christianstogether.net. That's www.christianstogether.net.